Thanks, Abby. Have you heard the story of a student many years ago, before phones and emails, who wrote home after their first term at uni? "Dear Mum and Dad, I'm sorry I've not written before now. It's been a busy few weeks. First, our halls of residence caught fire in week 3, and I had to escape by jumping from a third-story broken bedroom window. Please don't worry. I think I was lucky to escape with just 2 broken legs and a broken pelvis. I was looked after well in the local hospital, a great team of nurses, and one nurse in particular, actually. And dear Mum and Dad, to cut a long story short, last Saturday, that nurse and I got married. I'm sure it'll work out, and I think our friends are wrong to be alarmed at the difference in our age, language, religion, and interests. I think we'll be very happy. And dear Mum and Dad, please don't be alarmed at any of the things I've just told you, because none of it's true. The truth is, I've just failed my first term's exams, and I just wanted you to get things into perspective." Well, Daniel 2 is all about perspective. Daniel and his friends are the small remnant of God's people now living as exiles in a foreign land. In chapter 1, we saw how the land that God had promised them, Jerusalem, had been besieged by the impressive military power of King Nebuchadnezzar. They've had their patterns of worship attacked. They've lost all security, all freedom, given new names, new language, new laws. The people who were against God seemed in control. The anti-God superpower of their day in charge. And confident is not the emotion we would imagine them to be feeling right then. A weak, doubting God's promises, doubting that God's plan could come to be. They needed God's perspective to keep them confident. And so do we. The world can feel a confusing place to live, can't it? Christianity is increasingly sidelined by our culture, and the teachings of Jesus, once thought to be foundational to our society, are now shameful. Wrong, people say. We're the bad guys. Well, if you're feeling weak today as a Christian, anxious about going back to uni, if you've been struggling to stand firm for Jesus in your sports club, perhaps doubtful yourself that God's plan will come to be, then you're not alone. And our prayer these next 2 days is that we can be really real and honest together as we grapple in God's word, pray, and that we might find renewed confidence ourselves. Confidence in the God of Daniel, the God who still reigns. Despite the powerful forces against us, we have a God who does know the future, who sets the future, and he is the perspective that we all need to live in our world and in our sports clubs rightly. So that's where Daniel 2, I hope, is going to take us tonight. Do have your Bibles open, if you can, as we dive back into the story. You'll see we're in the second year of the reign of King Nebuchadnezzar. Nezzar, let's call him, because that's easier for me. The powerful bad guy in charge. Except here, at the beginning of chapter 2, Nezzar is in quite a state, not as in control as he thinks. See 2, verse 1. His mind was troubled. Unsettled sleep, to be precise, a recurring bad dream, the cause. But no sleeping pills back then, or access to his parents' Sky Sports account for some late night snooker or darts to distract. Maybe you'll be tuning in to 16-year-old Luke Littler tonight as he competes in the World Darts Final. Exciting. No, Nezzar is positively stressed. He calls in the experts from his government to help him, magicians, enchanters, sorcerers, astrologists. And he says, verse 5, do follow along with me if you've got your Bible. If you do not tell me what my dream was and interpret it, I will have you cut into pieces and your houses turned into piles of rubble. But if you can, oh, you'll get loads of presents and loads of honor. Now, I've had some broken sleep in my time, a few bad dreams, but this seems a bit of an extreme reaction. Not surprising then, when the astrologers in verse 10 rightly say, there is not a man on earth who can do what the king asks. And of course they're right, aren't they? If you've ever been to decodingmydreams.com, there is such a site, you'll find that along with your 16-digit bank card number, expiry date, and 3-digit security code, there's a box asking for you to retell your dream. No dream, no interpretation. Well, Nezer goes mad. Verse 12, angry and furious. He doesn't have the knowledge he needs. And nor do his precious wise men of Babylon. And true to his word, he orders the execution of them all. Enter to the story Daniel and his friends, verse 13. You see, they're included in this decree too. They could be eradicated in one mad Nezer moment. So Daniel acts, he doesn't want to die. And verse 14, with wisdom and tact, Daniel goes to Arioch and asks for an audience with the king. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm not sure I'd have had that kind of confidence to go and stand before a leader who is angry and furious and threatening to cut me and my friends into pieces. Nezer, he represents the post-Christian ideology that we see today in our culture, on social media, in films, in your changing room, the chat on the sports night out. Oh, there's no need for reference to God. Much better to live your life as though he doesn't exist. Be your own God, write your own script. Except, where has that left Nezer now? Stumped and mad. In total contrast, Daniel is confident because he knows his God. He knows his God is faithful, but here he knows his God can reveal the mystery of Nezer's dream, that his God is all-knowing, altogether different to the wise men of Babylon and greater than the intimidating, powerful megalomaniac that is Nezer. And so Daniel prays for mercy, trusting that God can save them from being executed. And verse 19, God graciously gives Daniel a vision in the night of Nebuchadnezzar's dream. And just look with me again at how Daniel responds. That's on the screen as well. Verse 20 to 23. Praise be to the name of God forever and ever. Wisdom and power are his. He changes times and seasons. He deposes kings and raises up others. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to the discerning. He reveals deep and hidden things. He knows what lies in darkness, and light dwells with him. I thank and praise you, God of my ancestors. You have given me wisdom and power. You have made known to me what we asked of you. You have made known to us the dream of the king. By verse 28, Daniel is standing before Nezer, who only hours before was ordering his murder, declaring, there is a God in heaven who reveals mysteries, and he has shown King Nebuchadnezzar what will happen in days to come. I wonder how badly do you want to know the future? Will you get selected? Will you make that PB this season? Will you get the job? Will you get married? Will things go well for you? Where is it all heading anyway? Will everything be okay in the end? Well, God knows it all. God knows the future. He changes times and seasons. He deposes kings and raises up others. He gives wisdom to the wise, knowledge to the discerning. He reveals deep and hidden things. He knows what lies in darkness, and light dwells with him. Guys, God writes the true script of our world. He's the creator. He sets the narrative of the future. He's the one with the wisdom, the knowledge on how life should be done. Put your confidence in him tonight, where you feel wobbly, where you're feeling the pressure to conform, where you're feeling anxious about speaking up for Jesus. Well, let's look at Nez's dream in verse 31 to 35. Apparently, the top most common bad dreams include teeth falling out, being chased, unable to find a toilet, naked in public, unprepared for an exam, flying, falling, being out of control in a vehicle, being lost, and being late. I'll leave the interpretations to you. Although may I reiterate our desire for these next few days to be a place where you can all be honest with each other. So if you do need to share that significant recurring dream where you're being chased, naked, with teeth falling out, unable to find a toilet, then please, please do come and find one of us. Well, for Neza, his dream was of a huge statue. In fact, an enormous, dazzling statue, awesome in appearance, verse 31. The statue was in four parts, a head of pure gold, chest and arms of silver, belly and thighs of bronze, legs of iron, and feet, partly of iron, partly of clay. And when a little rock strikes at the feet, the statue topples, falls, collapses, and it all goes, quite literally, to dust. The wind swept it away without leaving a trace. And verse 35, that rock that struck the statue became a huge mountain and filled the whole earth. Well, it's definitely up there in strange dreams, right? But what is the perspective God intends to bring through it? What is the hidden mystery he wants to reveal? The knowledge that you and I need to grasp in order to have a right perspective as we live as Christians in sport today. Well, as we look at Daniel's interpretation, we're going to see three things. We're in verse 36, if you're following. I hope we can take these away and chat them through together tonight. Firstly, verse 37 and 38, God's perspective on King Nez's reign. Your majesty, you are the King of kings. The God of heaven has given you dominion and power and might and glory. In your hands, he has placed all mankind and the beasts of the field and the birds in the sky, wherever they live. He has made you ruler over them all. You are the head of gold. Yes, Neza, you are the head of pure gold. Your empire is the greatest of the day. You've got awesome authority. Neza probably feeling a bit puffed up now. But Neza, Daniel says, verse 37, it is the God of heaven who's given you dominion and power. It's all from God. Three times, Daniel tells him, it's all God's doing. He's given you dominion. In your hands, he has placed. He has made. Neza, God has given you your rule. You didn't get it yourself. Neza is on God's leash. He operates under God's permission. And why God allows tyrannical and terrible leaders have power, we don't know. But God knows. And every impressive, dazzling, or intimidating power or narrative that thinks it's the next big thing with no need for God, or that even threatens to kill or silence God, it's all ultimately on God's leash, under his reign and control. So when you next feel like the odd one out in the drinking circle or unable to join in the chat on the coach after an away game, maybe when you feel threatened or silenced by an anti-Christian culture, alienated and left out because you follow Jesus, well, remember, God knows it all and he's still in control. And it won't last forever. That's the perspective God gives Daniel in verse 39 to 44 about all future rulers. We won't reread all these verses, but basically, Neza, sorry to disappoint you, your kingdom is not going to last forever. It's going to be followed by another, and by another, and by another. It's not the detail of these different periods of history and rule that we need to focus on, but the point, which is this. Kingdoms rise, and kingdoms fall. 2013 was the year we saw the long reign of Manchester United fall. Serena Williams' glittering 25-year reign in tennis turned its corner in September 22 when she was knocked out in the third round of the US Open in straight sets. But there was a time when people thought Manu and Serena Williams were unbeatable. Not the case now. And it's not just in sport. Think of the communist bloc, Hitler, Stalin, Saddam Hussein, all generations, all kingdoms, even cultures and systems, however big and powerful and intimidating they might appear at the time. They're all transient, here today and gone tomorrow. None last. Maybe there's an intimidating Neza in your life right now, or an anti-God agenda that pervades over your university or sports club, and it feels like it's going to reign forever. More and more people follow it, get drawn in by it, make you feel strange, even harmful for not going with it yourself. Well, it won't last. Sure, it might be followed by another kingdom and another, but none of them will last. He sets the real narrative for humanity. Jesus' kingdom is one of freedom and dignity and flourishing and blessing, and God's reign will outlive all these powerful, fashionable, woke forces which claim to have a superior knowledge. They won't last, but God's kingdom will. So thirdly, the knowledge we need to keep confident in God's reign when the culture turns against us, it's in verse 44. It's there on the screen. In the time of those kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom that will never be destroyed, nor will it be left to another people. It will crush all those kingdoms and bring them to an end, but it will itself endure forever. In the time of those kings refers to the fourth kingdom, a kingdom that had not yet come, a kingdom of iron in the future. So Neza long gone. This fourth kingdom was referring to what would become the Roman era. The reign of the Romans is regarded as one of the most impressive and powerful the world has seen. The Eternal City, people called it. Top of the Premier League. There's not a child in primary school who doesn't love learning about the Romans. But where are they now? Only artifacts in a museum remain of that era. Well, into the time of those kings, into the time of the mighty Romans, the God of heaven himself would set up a kingdom, an even greater kingdom, not of human hands, and it would never be destroyed. In Daniel 7, it will become clearer that this kingdom that will never be destroyed is the kingdom of Jesus. Jesus, a baby king born in the time of the Romans to a virgin. Not by human hands, but by the God of heaven. Nothing dazzling or impressive about him. Born in a stable. Hated and hunted down by another tyrannical king, Herod, but not destroyed. So, when Jesus hung upon the cross, it may have looked as though the Romans had won, that God wasn't in charge. But God had a plan, and he always does. And when Jesus rose from the grave, he smashed the reign of sin and death and ushered in a kingdom of forgiveness, of friendship with our Creator, of love, of freedom, of safety, and of hope. Hope that one day Jesus would return. And when his kingdom is fully realized, when all other kingdoms and narratives are crushed and destroyed, there'll be no more confusion, no more darkness, no more sadness, no more crying, no more death. This is the kingdom we are to be witnesses to, living under the reign of Jesus, surrendered to his loving rule, even when it's tough. It's the best place to be. So when the tide of defining your own identity, being your own creator, doing life without any reference or acknowledgement to God at all, when that sweeps through your university campus or your sports club like a tsunami, remember Jesus. Have confidence in our God who reigns and whose kingdom will last forever. And our friends in our sports teams and our clubs, they need to know King Jesus. They need to be set free from this sort of ever-changing, shifting culture which only leaves them confused. They need to be found, just like us, safe and secure in the arms of the God of heaven, the revealer of mysteries, who promises them real life and his kingdom forever. And just as I finish, remember verse 35? The rock that struck the statue in Nez's dream. That rock became a mountain that covered the whole earth. What a picture to encourage us of Jesus' kingdom that will be like a mountain covering the whole earth, and it's begun. The God of heaven has already drawn in people from all over the world, has drawn in us, and nothing will stop his kingdom from continuing to grow. Take confidence in God's reign tonight. Take confidence in God's reign, and you and I, we will be able to stand firm for him under any pressure. Tomorrow night, we'll see even more of that. We're just going to watch a short video as we finish, just to encourage you. It shows the unstoppable kingdom of Jesus. As other kingdoms rise and fall, his kingdom will keep on growing. Let's be witnesses to his kingdom.